Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another Bob and Richard show where we answer questions sent in by our readers. Many were sent with gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, and we got them from a lot of different places. So let's get started. One guy wrote, I have access to a stadium blackjack game. It has 8 decks, no resplitting. Dealer stands on soft 17. They're putting the cut card about 7 decks deep. Minimum bet $5, max $600. He's been able to sit there for weeks and only wong in when the count is favorable using KO. Any idea what bankroll I would need of spreading $25 to $100, but only betting when it's plus EV? Or any other ways to approach this?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say that anybody who wants to take card counting seriously really needs to get the Casino Verite software. You can find that at qfit.com. But the way we would do this in the old days, before the software, is I would say, let's say that your bankroll is $10,000. The game that you're talking about has an edge of approximately minus half of a percent. So at a true count of 1, you are dead even with the house. $10,000, for each true count, you gain half a percent. So at a true count of 2, you would have a half a percent edge. Half a percent of $10,000 is $50, but we were conservative, so we would bet half Kelly, or $25 per half percent edge. So at a true 2, I would bet 25. At a true 3, I would bet 50 on up to a max bet of $100 in your case. I think that is the best way to play it. You don't want to play any of the negatives if you don't have to. So for that kind of betting, I would suggest $10,000. But again, if you want to be more accurate, get the QFIT software, Casino Verite.
Very good. Something interesting slash traumatic happened to me within the last week. It had nothing to do with gambling, but it did happen while my wife and I were driving to have dinner with friends at the Paris Casino. We were traveling along a fairly dark street at night when unexpectedly 3 teenage boys wearing dark clothes decided to try to run across the street. They ran right in front of me in the middle of a long block. Fortunately, I saw them immediately and was able to slow down and stop before reaching them. The car behind me was far enough away, so I had no problem. The car next to me was traveling a little bit faster, didn't see them quite as quickly as I did, and skidded to a stop less than 10 feet from where 2 of the boys were. At this point, once they saw they survived, the boys laughed, continued to cross the street, and disappeared into the night. I was a bit unnerved. I could have been a killer. I've made it to 70 years so far without killing anybody, and I'd like to make it the rest of the way. But that record could have ended instantly in last week. Had I killed somebody, I'm pretty sure I would have been fine legally. It was dark, dark night, middle of the block, dark clothes. It's pretty much a run-at-your-own-risk situation. I was 100% sober. Still, dealing with the police afterwards would probably not have been a whole lot of fun, and who knows what it would have done to my sleep. Anyway, after a couple deep breaths and checking to see that Bonnie was okay, we continued on our way. When we got to the Paris parking lot, I parked in a space where I was head into a concrete wall. At that point, I learned my headlights were off. I had driven for 10 to 15 minutes in the dark without headlights. There were running lights on my car, but no headlights. It's been probably 3 years since I had done this, but I did it that night. Now, I reflected again on what would have happened if I had killed the guy with my headlights turned off. There might have been significant legal ramifications. There would definitely have been nightmares, and who knows what else. The guy would have been just as dead under both scenarios, but my life would have been a lot different. Richard.
Yeah, I can see where that would be a traumatic thing, especially once you realize that your headlights were off. I have to say, people in Las Vegas are freaking crazy. At least once a week, there's somebody on the news that got killed jaywalking. Happens all the time, all over Las Vegas. And I don't understand it, but people seem to do it a lot here. My neighborhood is particularly dark. There are no streetlights. And it seems people have to go out and walk their dogs after dark, and they always wear dark clothes. So
there's no sidewalks there either,
are there? There are no sidewalks, that's right. So they're out walking in the dark wearing, you know, black, and it really kind of freaks me out. But so I go very slow in my neighborhood. But anyway, yeah, I can see where that would be traumatic. I probably would have lost sleep over it too. So thankfully it was a non-event.
This next one, somebody wanted Bob and Richard, both of us, to answer the question. So the first one, Richard, you get to answer it first. And it is, what do you wish someone had told you at the beginning of your playing career?
I wish they had told me, make hay when the sun is shining. When the good games are there, play the extra hours when you're young and single and don't have children to worry about, because those opportunities they're all going to die eventually. B, don't listen to so-called experts on the internet. When I started, there was no internet, but there were always experts, you know, armchair experts. And don't listen to the conventional wisdom. For example, you will see all over the internet, guys will say things like, computers are illegal, you'll go to jail. Well, in some places they are, maybe in some places they're not. If you're interested in that, you need to do your own research. You can't beat 6-5 blackjack. Well, that's complete baloney. I mean, 6-5 blackjack was just a gold mine to people when it first came in. So that the point is, do your own research, do your own scouting. Don't listen to what everybody else is saying. And often when they're saying things like that, there's the potential to make a lot of money, because it means a lot of players are not investigating whatever that particular avenue might be. That's what I wish they had told me. And the other thing that I tell my son, who's just starting out, is your success will be determined by how hard you work and the people that you surround yourself with. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Good. It's a good answer. One of the advantages to hosting this show is I get to sit next to Richard when he gives his good answers. So I get them before you do, sort of. All right. What I wish somebody told me is that winning isn't all that glamorous. It's hard work. You're going to have to put up with casino ploys and other players resenting your success. Yes, it turned out well for me. I have more money accumulated than I probably would have had from a regular job. But it didn't have to turn out that way. For a couple years, I was over-roiled on big machines. Had I been under-roiled during those years, my world would look very different today. Variance is a key. We all say we understand it, but we only go through life once. If you are over-roiled, it's a whole lot different than being under-roiled, and your perspective of the world is very different in those two cases.
Yeah, true story. Yeah, well, I think a lot of people who hit a bad run of luck early end up quitting, and they end up doing something else.
As well they should. Four. This one I'm going to handle first, but the question is, what purchase of $100 or less in the last year has brought you the most happiness or been the most useful? For me, the answer is probably joining Toastmasters. Toastmasters is a learn how to speak better group that has been around forever, but I never had any interest. But I do wish to speak better in my classes and on this podcast, so it's really a smart move for me. There are 80 such groups in Greater Los Angeles, probably more. There are 80 such groups in Greater Las Vegas. I found one with a particularly dynamic leader that I thought I could learn well from. Glad I did. Preparing and giving speeches about something other than gambling exercises totally different mental muscles than I'm used to. Our club costs $10 a month and we meet weekly. I get plenty of opportunities to speak and learn to improve. In a similar vein, I'm going to improv classes. Now, improvisation is comedy. You get up on a stage with some, either by yourself or with one, two, or three other people. They give you a scenario, and they say, go, and you make it up on the spot.
Like the TV show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Maybe. And it's, our group costs $10 a session, or about half that if you sign up for 3 months at a time. And you really keeps you sharp and alert, and you screw up, and you sometimes do well. And it's a lot of fun, and it's mental exercise, and I'm getting a kick out of it.
I guess my answer would be, I've always been a game player. And when I was a kid, I played a lot of, in addition to a lot of card games, I also played a lot of board games. And board games, when I was a kid, they kind of sucked. Games like Monopoly or Risk would take like 4 hours to play, and halfway through, you knew who the winner was going to be, but it would take 2 hours for them to actually grind through the game and win it. But there's been a resurgence in board games in the last couple of decades, and the games have gotten just infinitely better than they were. And so I've been playing a lot of these board games, and many of them cost $40 or $50, and they've been a lot of fun. Some of my favorites are that I've been playing in the last year are Stone Age, Power Grid, Ticket to Ride. So yeah, I would say board games.
Uh-huh. Final question from this particular listener. I guess you get to go first this time. What are your favorite gambling books other than your own?
Well, I think my favorite would be a book called Fast Company by John Bradshaw.
Good book.
It was the inspiration for my book. It is a series of profiles of either 6 or 8, I can't remember now, professional gamblers. And this book was written in the 70s. So it was Titanic Thompson, who was still alive, Minnesota Fats, Bobby Riggs, Puggy Pearson, Johnny Moss. And my book is interview style, but his was more narrative written. And uh-huh. I really, really loved that book.
I did too. My list is long. I enjoy reading. I've read everything gambling related I could find because a lot of gambling success is related to strategic thinking. And the more you study strategic thinking in general, the better you'll be able to think strategically, in particular whenever a situation comes along. I've read lots and lots and lots of books on bridge, backgammon, blackjack, poker, video poker, and a few other games. Anything Stanford Wong or Arnold Snyder was published, I was getting. Same with Michael Konek, and today, same with Michael Kaplan. If I can't mention my books, I can surely mention Richard's, Gambling Wizards. It's very good. As he was saying, it's an interview book about gambling experts from a variety of different gambling areas. When he wrote it, my big wish was that he'd decide to do a Volume 2 someday and maybe include a chapter about me. Never happened, and now I don't really expect it to or really care that much anymore. Writing a gambling book is really hard, and you get almost no money out of it. I felt about the same with Michael Konek, who quit writing about interesting gambling folks before he got to me, but I have forgiven them both. Moving on.
You know, you mentioned Michael Konek. I love his book, The Man with $100,000 Breasts and Other Gambling Stories.
Yes.
And another thing I'd like to mention that's a little bit more obscure for younger people is the stories of Damon Runyon. Damon Runyon wrote just incredible short stories about gamblers. The movie Guys and Dolls, the musical, is based on one of his stories. They're great. And if you like the stories of O. Henry, you'll really like Damon Runyon. He writes about a lot of gamblers in New York back in the 20s. So, yeah, I really liked his stories, too.
It's been a while since I read Runyon. Maybe I should go back and try it again. Thank you, Richard. All right, different question. It would be interesting if Richard could talk about the transition of top blackjack players into carnival game APs. How did Growth Gene influence this transition? Were top players concerned his book might get in the wrong hands and actually backfire?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, people were mad when Ed Thorpe wrote his book, Beat the Dealer, right? Now, 99% of the players didn't know the information, but the ones who did cried and moaned that he's ruining the game. And, you know, so there are always people who don't like other people to reveal information. And what's funny is often they're the same people that got the information from the guy who wrote it in the first place.
Yes.
Right. So James Grosjean wrote his first book. It was about the year 2000. And he talked about one carnival game in that book, which was three-card poker. And there are still three-card poker games to play all over the world, just as there are still card-counting opportunities 60 years after, or 55 years after Ed Thorpe wrote his book. So, yes, people complained about it. Did he influence it? Yes, because people then realized, oh, whenever these casinos bring out a new game, there is the opportunity to beat it. So people transitioned into playing the carnival games for two reasons. Number one, the edge on carnival games for the player, if you know what you're doing, is much higher than it is counting cards. And two, counting cards has the most heat for the smallest edge. So the casinos know more about what a card counter looks like than they do about stopping an advantage player at any other kind of game. So the other reason to switch over to carnival games was it would take a lot longer for the casinos to realize that you were playing with an edge.
Very good. I'm going to ask another question on this same general subject, and I'm going to answer it first. And a listener asked what strategy deviations would be used if we have a use once match play coupon at our disposal. This question was very nicely addressed by James Grosjean in a Blackjack Forum issue. Rather than simply iterate what Grosjean said, if you Google Grosjean Beyond Coupons, you'll find it. If you ever use coupons, it's a worthwhile read. They have somewhat similar promotions in video poker sometimes. One casino offered a 100 coin bonus, limit $200, on four aces during a particular month. So I looked at how should players attack this. My answer involved considering how much you play at that casino anyway. Four aces come about every 4,000 to 5,000 hands on average, depending on the game. If you're planning to play on... If you plan on stopping your play for the month when you hit the four aces, I would enter an extra 100 coins into the pay schedule. That is double bonus now pays 900 for four aces rather than 800. Jacks are better now pays 225 instead of 125. Using Video Poker for Winners or other programs, now you can look at the strategy deviations. But if you typically play 50,000 hands in a month anyway at that casino, whether the promotion's on or not, I wouldn't make any strategy deviations at all. It's basically a certainty that you're going to be getting the four aces anyway, and the promotion is merely a 100 coin bonus, so there's no need to make any changes at all.
Makes sense.
All right, move on to a different subject. It's fairly common for strong video poker players to sometimes play slot machines for cover, so that the casino doesn't peg them as APs. One listener plays must-hit-buy slots, which are close to or above break-even. He wants to know whether this would make him appear more like an AP rather than less.
You're asking me?
I actually have an answer. If you want to go first. No,
I really don't know how casinos view that at all. I have no I have no idea.
All right. So I...
But wait. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
But let's say you're a card counter who is playing these must-hit-buy slots in the hopes that this is going to buy you some time with the casino. My answer would be, I don't think it'll buy you a thing. If they think you're a card counter, it doesn't matter what else you're doing. You're going to be gone.
Okay, back to the original question before I was so rudely interrupted. Whether doing these must-hit buys would make you seem more like an AP rather than less, is possible. Yeah, probably not, though. The algorithms used by casinos aren't that sophisticated. For the most part, these decisions are made by machine, not by humans. If you were suspected of being too strong, then a human might look at the record more closely. But every casino is different, and there's probably some that use this information to help them make the decision, but I think most don't.
I mean, how much do you think casinos know about must-hit-buy machines? How aware are they that there are pros playing them and that they can have a theoretical advantage?
Would not care to make a generalization on casinos as a whole. It's fairly common knowledge, so I'm assuming many slot directors know. But what percentage know, I don't know. Somebody would like to sincerely request, that's better than just merely request, it's a sincerely request, Richard, to discuss traveling bankroll. How much cash should you carry?
As much as you can. as James Grosjean says, pack less clothes and more money. Seriously, I would say as much as you can. I mean, obviously, if your bankroll is $10,000, it's different than if your bankroll is $500,000. If your bankroll is $10,000, take all of it. If your bankroll is $500,000, you're probably not asking me this question because you've dealt with these kind of issues and have come up with some kind of solutions, I would think. You know, I think once you cross $100,000, there's always the danger of having your money stolen by the government, right? So, and it seems to me that it's more dangerous right now to drive with cash than it is to fly with it. The last year, I'm hearing much less problems in airports. I haven't heard any, actually, in the last year of anybody having any money confiscated in an airport. You know, always declare it if you're traveling overseas. You have to declare it if it's over $10,000 going out of the country or coming back in. You don't have to declare it if you're traveling within the country. I would investigate, you know, Bitcoin if you're traveling out of the country. That may be an option, depending on...
But you can handle the variance. We're,
last
week, in a couple of days, it lost 50% of its value. That could be annoying to some people.
Yeah, it sure can. Yeah.
One of the things we found out on this show is that some people who were stopped in Oklahoma on I-40 in their car and driving, the police did not search them. They searched the car royally. They tore it apart, but they did not search the actual players.
So right. This is often the case.
If I were driving with significant cash, my costume for driving would be cargo pants, where you can have these big fat pockets on your thigh level, and you can easily get $100,000 in decent cargo pants. And if there's, you know, two or three of you in the car, you can get most people could get their entire bankroll on their person reasonably comfortably.
Yeah, I like money belts as well. You know, if they see bulges in those pockets, they may ask what's in them or search you or whatever. Money belts, you know, fit under your clothes and... you can put a lot of money in some of those. So,
okay, good. Somebody wants to know, if you had found out about Advantage Play earlier in your life or were a younger man now, would you have left your career and immediately gone to become an AP? Richard.
Well, I pretty much did. I mean, I learned about counting. I was going through college, making my money playing backgammon and poker, I heard about counting cards. I wasn't 21 yet. I got playing blackjack as a business and started practicing. And after I graduated college, I moved to Las Vegas to start gambling. So I couldn't have done it any earlier than I did. But I want to just relay one of my favorite stories. There's a book called Moon and Sixpence by Somerset Maugham.
Yes.
And it's the story of Paul Gauguin, the painter. And Gauguin was a banker in London, and he had a wife and kids. And one day he just up and left, quit his job, left his wife, moved to Paris to start painting. And in the book, the narrator of the book, the wife goes to him and says, he's run off with a mistress, he's in Paris, he left this good job, go talk some sense into him, tell him to come home. And the guy goes to Paris, and he finds Gauguin living in an attic. There's no mistress, he's broke, and he's painting. And he says, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, this is what I have to do, I have to paint. And he said, well, are you any good at it? And Gauguin says, if you threw me off a boat into the ocean and I had to swim for my life, you wouldn't ask me if I'm any good at it. This is what I have to do to live. And so I tell people, whether it's people who want to go be an actor or a singer or a professional gambler, unless you feel like you have to do it, then don't. Because I don't think you're going to be successful if you don't have that kind of drive and passion where there is no other option.
Interesting. Good. Yeah, I kept coming back to gambling. Would periodically go broke, go out and get a real job, and then always wanted to come back. And fortunately, I moved to Vegas in 93 and have been able to stay here forever.
You know, I've said I've retired from gambling four or five times. I keep coming back too. But I had an equal passion, you know, for the entertainment business. So the first time I retired was in 1983 when I went to Los Angeles to pursue the entertainment business. So, you know, both of those have been passions of mine that have been rewarding.
Very good. So the same guy wants to know what Richard and I did for a career. And I was a country western dance teacher, which is the source of my dancer pseudonym. I also worked in IT departments for about 10 years between the time I ran out of money playing backgammon and saved enough to move to Vegas. My education's in economics. I got to the PhD level, but never wrote the dissertation. At the time, I didn't know how to write, and so I never finished the PhD. And then, ironically, I became a professional writer, so I just never figured out how that happened. So, Richard, you've already told us you had this passion for theater. Anything else?
So I went to Los Angeles. I found out pretty quickly that acting in film and television was nothing like stage, which is what my background was. But I was able to make the transition into film and television as a director, writer, producer. And so I pursued that for quite a number of years, but always would go make gambling trips between movies and things.
All right. The following is a question for Richard. He says, I'm looking to play blackjack as a counter part-time to supplement my income. How should I handle the $3,000 that I'm starting with as far as bet spread and betting ramp? I hear about $5 and $10 minimum tables. They don't exist in the casinos in my area without a CSM. The only good shoe games, 6-deck, S17, DAS, no surrender, usually have a $25 minimum bet.
Yeah, it is really hard to work your way up as a card counter nowadays. Right, you're correct. There are no $5 tables anymore. Or, you know, very few. First of all, I think you would have to think of your bankroll as replenishable. you would have to bet it as if you had more money, realizing that you may lose the whole $3,000 and have to go back to work and build up another $3,000 or whatever. One option would be to start playing video poker instead of counting cards. You could start out with 25-cent video poker. If I was going to count cards, then I would back count the $25 table. Like the first question we had of the day, the guy who only bets once the count is, once he has an advantage, you could stand behind $25 tables and only bet once you had an edge and just bet $25. And that's it. But it would be, I mean, don't think that you're going to make any considerable amount of money with your $3,000 bankroll.
Are there sufficient games where mid-shoe entry is allowed? In Vegas, everywhere says no mid-shoe entries.
No, there are a lot of. I mean, it just depends. That seems to go in cycles. But I don't know where this listener lives. So, you know, mm-hmm. your results may vary.
All right. Another listener, another question. My name is X. How original. Must be an algebra teacher. Okay. My name is X. I live in California. I've been an AP with slots for the past year, earning over 15 hand pays totaling over $45,000. The past 8 months, I've engulfed myself into blackjack and have become obsessed with counting cards. I've read Black Belt in Blackjack, The Big Book of Blackjack, Blackjack Blueprint, as well as the classic Beat the Dealer. What other books would you recommend reading? I'd like a more advanced book. Richard.
Well, the books you read are really good. I particularly like Blackjack Blueprint. You might also pick up Professional Blackjack by Stanford Wong is a good one. I liked the books by Ken Houston just because in addition to the how-to counting stuff and had stories about his teams and things. So I always enjoyed those kind of books. But you have the basic information. And Blackjack Blueprint has some information about things that are a little more advanced, like shuffle tracking and asequencing and things. There are no advanced AP books that are going to teach you how to go out and do other things. There just aren't. There is a book called The Shuffle Tracker's Cookbook, but I'd actually not recommend that you travel down that road because I think shuffle tracking is often a way for people to fool themselves into thinking they have an edge when they actually do not. The shuffles nowadays are much more complex and, to my mind, not worth learning to try to track them. So, yeah, pick up Professional Blackjack. Try the books by Ken Houston.
Okay, we have a player who's practicing and putting in time. And his problem is when he suffers a big loss, it's really hard for him to take it psychologically. And so wants to know what to do about that.
Don't gamble. No, I mean, you mentioned earlier, all of us have to get used to that aspect of it. And some people can handle that and some people cannot. If you want to wade into it, then bet what you're comfortable with. You know, in the beginning when I started betting red chips and then I would bet greens, that seemed like a lot. And then you get used to it, and then you start betting greens, and when you get it, you know, when your count goes way up and you start betting into blacks, that seemed like a lot. But eventually you get used to that, and then, you know, so you can go up slowly. If your bankroll says your top bet should be $600, it doesn't mean you have to start there, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have that bankroll.
Yeah, losing streaks is 100% guarantee in gambling. in my classes that I teach that if you can't handle the losing streaks, then you should strongly consider giving up gambling and taking up bowling or something, because you're just not cut out for it.
Wait, you mean you can bowl without gambling?
Somebody said, at my local casino, I've been entered into a point challenge. For 14 straight days, I need to rack up as many points as possible. The winner gets free tickets to a football game, box seats, free food and drinks, plus $200 in cash. My choice of games are 5-play 9-6 jacks or better, and 5-play 9-6 bonus poker deluxe. I've run the scenario on the Video Poker for Winners software, autoplay, and never went flat broke without hitting royals to keep me in the game, including the cashback and free play. I'm over 100%. I only have a starting bankroll of $10,000. Which game should I play, or is it not enough money? Let me handle this one. If you're playing quarters, you got plenty of money. And I would recommend Bonus Poker Deluxe because it has a higher EV. If you're playing dollars, you probably should consider jacks or better because of the lower variance. 10,000 isn't a whole lot of solid dollar five play.
Well, wait, maybe I misunderstand the situation. It sounded to me like he's in this bonus challenge where the person who accumulates the most points is going to get this package. I don't see how he could possibly accumulate the most points betting that small. There has to be some rich ploppies in this casino that are betting $10 a spin on slot machines or something. Or maybe it's accumulate X number of points and you get it, regardless of everybody else. I don't know.
You are right there, and I'm going to get to that.
Oh, sorry.
Whichever game you play, there will probably be other folks trying to win. There's a possibility, maybe even a significant probability, that you can bust your ass for 14 straight days and still not win. If the free play and cashback are high enough, go for it. If not, and you have to win the point challenge just to break even, this is probably not a really good play. There are features at being an AP that involve some sort of pulling off a heist, which has similarities to cheating, but are actually legal. You might get kicked out of a casino, but there's little chance of going to jail. For some players, do you think of this AP work as a stepping stone that leads them down to a life of criminal activity?
Personally, I don't know any APs that have become bank robbers or any other kind of robbers. So, no, but I do get the analogy, and sometimes I've been involved with projects that have been very complicated, where we synchronize our watches and, you know, there's all kind of technology involved and things. And when I've talked about those with people, often people will say something like, oh my God, you know, if you guys could do that, think what you could do in the business world. And my answer has always been, if we can do that, why on earth would we want to be in a real job? So
that's right. And yeah, there are times I told somebody, well, I really have to be in the casino at 3 a.m. because there's this opportunity that's presenting itself. And if I'm not there by 3, I'll probably miss out on it. And invariably, if they're not a gambler, they're just shaking their head, having no wish to have any part of anything that crazy, which is fine with me.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have a losing session and you keep losing and losing and losing. Would a pro like you quit or continue playing anyway? For me, I'm a flat better. It would be absolutely time to quit or even completely quit for good because I was losing. Conversely, if you're in a winning session, would you walk at some point or continue? You want it first or second?
I'll go first. So if I'm playing in a casino, whether I'm winning or losing, actually, that I was going to say something that's not true. I was going to say it would have no bearing, but it does have bearing, but not for the reason that the asker thinks it does. If I'm losing, I tend to play much longer because the casino is not worried about me. So the more I'm losing, the longer I get to play. When I'm winning, I have to stop early because the casino now is starting to sweat me. And usually I want to get out before they throw me out. So, but let's say that I was a small player where the amount of money that I was playing for isn't going to wake that casino up. In that case, as long as the game is good, I'm going to keep playing. On the other hand, if I'm playing poker, then when I'm losing, I would tend to quit earlier because for two reasons. One, my judgment may be affected and I may not be playing as well. And two, my table image is not as good. The players are not afraid of me. So I would tend to stop earlier playing poker when I'm losing. If I'm winning, I want to stay longer for exactly the same reasons. The players are afraid of me. And I still may be playing badly. I don't know. But anyway, if I'm playing poker, I would tend to stay longer when I'm winning and leave sooner when I'm losing.
I give a lecture in the last class every other semester where I set up a scenario where players are playing and one is basing it on score and one is not. And the vast majority of ploppy players the first time they come to the class are positive that when you're winning, you should ride your hot streak. And when you're losing, you should get out of Dodge. And I tell them winning or losing has nothing to do with it. What matters is, are you playing with an edge? And if you're playing with an edge, go for it. If you're not playing with an edge, quit as soon as you can. And which means now or don't start. And people don't seem to want to get that. It's a very simple secret to winning at gambling is bet when you have the edge and don't bet when you don't. But it's tough for some people. We're going to take a break now, do some commercials. We'll be back very shortly.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Throughout January, Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. to 2:59 a.m., it's a $500,000 spin to win promotion. Earn 500 slot points or 2,000 video poker points, and you spin a virtual wheel right at your machine. Prizes are all points or free play. You can earn up to 4 spins a day. The spins have been averaging about $12, which means 0.6% for video poker players. If the South Point has your email address, you've been getting extra free play on the weekends. It's too late to get in on this for January, but the casino does this 2 or 3 times a year. There's a payoff. This isn't that important for out-of-towners, but locals who ever play at the casino should strongly consider giving their email address. The fourth week of the free video poker class this semester, on Tuesday, January 30th, beginning at noon in the Silverado Lounge, is Jacks or Better Multi-Strike. This is a 99.8 game where you pay for 4 lines up front. You play the bottom line. If you do not score, the hand is over. If you do score on the bottom line, you get to play the second line at no additional cost for double the return. If you score there, you move up to the next line at 4 times the stakes for no extra ante. And if you score there, you'll play the top line at 8 times the stakes. 8 times the stakes for no time. If you score there, you play the top line at 8 times the stakes for no additional money. Periodically, you receive a free ride, which means you will move up to the next line, regardless of whether you score on this line or not. 4 separate strategies are needed to play this game, depending on which line you are on and whether or not you have a free play. But strategies are pretty similar, so it's a manageable task to learn the game. The classes are free, and if you're at least 21 years of age, you're invited. The Silverado Lounge is the first one you come to once you reach the casino from the parking garage. It is right in front of Don Vito's restaurant. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Magic Deal Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where periodically you receive 1, 2, or very rarely 3 Magic Deal cards. These cards become the highest valued cards after the draw. This is somewhat similar to Dream Card, but Dream Card is a 6 coin per line game. It gives you 1 card only, and in that game you have to decide before the draw. On the base game, the strategy is exactly the same as regular video poker. When you get dream cards, the strategy is fairly intuitive. Players experienced at a lot of different video poker games will do well at figuring out what the dream card hold should be.
Okay, let's get back to our questions.
If a small casino doesn't bother to use a cut card to hide the bottom card of the shoe on a double deck or a 6-deck game and uses a hand shuffle, plus doesn't bother to change cards when the 9 of clubs is bent so badly that I can see when it's the next card to be dealt, is it safe to assume they're not looking for card counters and I can play with little or no cover? This is a $25 to $500 limit game, and it's considered high stakes at this place. By little cover, I mean spreading 25 to 200, raising after a loss, but not by more than a full parlay, lowering after win, even 200 to 25, but always leaving a push. I would always make the correct index or basic strategy play, except I always ensure naturals and always stand on 16 versus 10.
First of all, it's never safe to assume that they're not going to throw you out for counting cards, even if you go play slot machines or no matter what you do. It's just one of those things that they have learned. Oh, we know what card counters are. They're bad. We're going to throw them out no matter what. So the bent 9 of clubs, that means nothing. Now, if the cards are really in that bad of shape, you ought to be thinking about other ways of beating that game, other things you can take advantage of without counting cards that might even give you a bigger edge. I'm not a big fan of cover for a card counter, just because I don't think it buys you anything, with one exception. The one exception for me would be I would not split 10 when it's called for, because that play, the people in the casinos know you're either an idiot or a card counter or a good player. So they're going to know very quickly that you're not an idiot because you're hitting soft 18 against a 9 and a 10 and things like that. So anyway, that's one play that I would not do for cover. But I would just, you know, play your game, and eventually you are going to get barred, no matter what. Eventually you will get barred, so you might as well play your game, and you'll last as long as you last.
All right. Our next question is from somebody who's not a real big fan of one particular casino chain. He says, I have read where the Rio is dealing something called Easy Baccarat. It's supposed to be exactly like the normal game, but no commission on the banker bet. Is this real or just another Caesars Entertainment trap in the fine print?
It's almost just like the real game.
Yeah, it is almost, and you should consider using the Wizard of Odds website as a resource. Whether it's dealt at the Rio or not, I'm not sure. And you're right that the winner banker bet pays no commission. But to make up for that, when the banker wins with a 3-card total of 7, that bet is a push rather than a win. According to the Wizard of Oz site, the house edge is 1.02%.
Yeah, so for 30, 40 years, people have been trying to get rid of the commission in Baccarat because it slows the game down tremendously. So there are a lot of variations. Easy Bach is one of them. That's probably the most popular in the United States. And, there's always something to make up for the commission. They're not going to just give you an edge for every player that bets the bank.
In Vegas recently, there was a new casino called the Lucky Dragon that was on Sahara, a block west of the Strip. And it was geared mainly towards Asian players and had a lot of nice features. It closed in early January. The casino closed. They still are keeping the hotel open for now, but that may close too. Richard, did you hear anything about this?
No, not really. I guess they were just underfunded and couldn't make a go of it.
What I heard was they opened up being too generous to the video poker people, not in the games. 8-5 bonus was about the best, but they gave great bounce backs. And so you play a relatively minor amount, and you get these checks in the mail for several hundred dollars a week. And they were just... So the players, we all told each other, hey, do you know about the Lucky Dragon? And so this was creamed by basically the wrong sort of players who knew what a gold mine this was and told their other smart players. So the casino reacted to that by shutting that all down drastically and quickly. And when they did, these players go, all right, if they want to be that, we'll just go somewhere else. And they did. So it was an empty casino now. And they appeared to be underfunded, and some banknotes came due and they couldn't get the funds, and so they're going out of business. It is a humbling experience to run a casino. Running it in a different town and then saying, oh yeah, well, we'll just open up the doors and they'll come running to us, just doesn't really work that way. SLS had problems with that. Klondike seemed to follow the same scenario as the Lucky Dragon, although they're still in there fighting. But they were much too loose with the promotions early on, and then they kicked a lot of us out, and so we shall see.
I heard they had some good restaurants. I never ate there, so sorry to see that part of it go.
It might still be there. It's just the casino that closed.
Oh, I thought they closed the restaurants as well.
I'm not sure. Yeah. All right. A listener wants to know, what would we recommend to a middle-aged man who was just starting out as an AP?
I would recommend reading the book Comp City, not trying to make a bunch of money gambling, but to have fabulous vacations. Learn how to take advantage of the comp systems and go stay at great hotels all over the place for free, basically.
And my answer would generally be limited to video poker, because that's the only AP game I can speak out with expertise. Still, certain principles are available across several game types. I would really want to know such things for this guy, like, where's this guy planning on living? There are significant differences in the way states tax W2Gs and the availability of decent games nearby. What size bankroll does this guy have? I certainly started out when I was 47 years old and had a $6,000 bankroll, but the opportunities today are significantly different than they were in 1994 Las Vegas. You need a significantly bigger bankroll to survive the thinner edges available today. Does this guy already know how to play some of the games? Say jacks are better, deuces wild, and a couple others. How well does he play them? Learning to play the games at the professional level is definitely a learnable skill for some people. Others don't seem to be able to get very good at the game. I wouldn't want to make this a this is what I'm going to do forever commitment unless and until he's shown that he can actually do it. Some people do not have what it takes to be an AP. Many people. Has he spent much time in casinos for, say, a week or more straight? Casinos are smoky, noisy, and lots of people are drinking and causing distractions. Are you good with this? Gambling on a couple weekends a year is a totally different experience than doing it every day for months and months. What is your marital status? If you're married or have a steady, how does this person feel all about this? For simplicity, I'm going to call this other person a woman. My own experience is that not all wives are gung-ho about this process. And the first time you come home after a $5,000 loss, is she going to go ballistic, file for divorce, put her foot down, something? Is she going to be an AP along with you? If so, the same kind of questions I'm asking you should be asked of her as well. How good is this guy at basic math? A lot of video poker is figuring out how much the game is worth, how much a promotion is worth, and what's the slot club. These are not tough questions, but if you don't have a facility with math, they're too difficult. How are this guy's networking skills? Reading is important, but a lot of the knowledge you obtain will be learned by talking to other people. I still get information this way, and I've been doing this for more than 2 decades, and have basically read everything. Or written everything. Is this guy good at being his own boss? Not everybody is good at self-motivation. If you do well at these questions, then you should basically read the Dancer Daily Winner's Guides and Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner.
There you go. If you want to go after blackjack, then pick up Knockout Blackjack or a Blackjack Blueprint or Black Belt in Blackjack. But if you're looking for great, vacations, nice lifestyle, think about Comp City.
And Max's book was written a while ago. I'm not sure how much different the comp system is in blackjack. In video poker, the comps we got in the 90s were such better deals than what we're getting out there today.
Right, but the basic concepts are the same.
All right. Somebody wants to know if multi-line video poker games are a smarter play than single-line games. Multi-line games, video poker, affect the variance, but not the EV. A single-line game with a better pay schedule is better than a multi-line game with a lesser pay schedule. For the same pay schedule and amount played, multi-line games have a lower variance. How important variance is depends on whether the stakes you're playing are close to your bankroll limit.
Something I should add.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to the beginning of this show when we were talking about things I wish someone had told me.
Uh-huh.
And handling the swings. What I wish they had told me is variance is actually your friend. We are able to make money because there's variance involved. If we went in and just ground out $100 an hour, we wouldn't last very long at all. The reason that we're able to last is that sometimes we lose a lot of money. And when you lose big, often the casino gives you stuff, which is part of your EV. Sometimes they're giving you cash or airfare or things like that. So if you can learn how to handle the swings, the bigger the swing you can take, the better it actually is for you.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned in my $1 million video poker book, like if you're going to, let's say you're going to win 50,000, you know, lose 50,000, you're going to do them both. The smarter way is to lose 50,000 first.
Right.
The casinos have great sympathy. You're going to get a significant rebate, especially if you ask, especially if you cry a little bit. If you get way ahead first and then just lose it back, you don't get nearly as much.
Yeah.
So, of course, there are people who argue that you should get that $50 windfall and then stop playing, but people don't really do that.
Well, those people make trillions of dollars in the stock market because they know what, you know, what's going to happen ahead of time. So,
yes. Somebody else wanted to know, is our bonus multi-line games such as Super Times Pay, Double Super Times Pay, Quick Quads, etc., smarter to play than regular multi-line games? And on that list of games, they're just not the same. Super Times Pay and Double Super Times Pay have the same strategy as the base game and return more than the base game. Quick Quads is a totally different game. Sometimes Quick Quads has a higher return, sometimes it doesn't. Bankrolls. Please explain why the average bankroll is 3 to 4 times the jackpot. I guess it confuses me. If I have to save $4,000 just to earn a $1,000 quarter jackpot, how would that ever be profitable, even with cashback and promotions? Hitting a royal flush is a relatively rare event. You are going to lose between royal flushes. Bankroll isn't about hitting one royal. It's about how much you need to play indefinitely. Richard, what apps are the best for practicing blackjack?
I have no idea. I don't use any apps for blackjack. I've mentioned on your computer the QFIT software, Casino Verite. I really don't know about any of the apps. My understanding is that the blackjack apprenticeship guys who run blackjack bootcamp, that they have an app, but I haven't looked at it, and so I really have no idea what the good blackjack apps are. Maybe some of our listeners can write into us and tell us, and you know, we'll
post it or talk about it.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to know if there is a tutorial for Dream Card. And no tutorial for Dream Card is necessary because it has exactly the same strategy as the base game. That is, if you know how to play 9-6 jacks or better perfectly, you automatically know how to play 9-6 jacks or better Dream Card perfectly. All right. I think we're going to close this show up. We still have bunches of questions left, which means we're going to do this again in the near future. So thank you, Richard. This has been interesting. For our listeners, go out and hit a royal flush. Goodbye.